Okay, good evening, and welcome to the first session of this Torah in Motion series that will be an attempt to study the first volume of a book called Bilvavi Mishkan Evne, In My Heart I Construct a Sanctuary. And this is a book that I actually stumbled across in a Jewish bookstore a couple of years ago and was intrigued by it. The book was published anonymously, and it carried a half a dozen rabbinic approbations from some of the great leading rabbinic authorities in Israel, and the topic of the book also caught my attention. It deals with how to grow spiritually as a Jew, and I soon discovered that the author actually had published over a dozen other svarim on similar topics, on actually very esoteric topics as well. And after a number of months, the book caught on worldwide. It became very popular. And after a while, it was revealed who the author was. His name is Rav Itamar Schwartz, who's actually much younger than you would have assumed he was. Being so prolific, you would have imagined that this was an anonymous author in his middle ages or beyond, but he seems to be someone in his 30s. Because the book and the practice of this book has become so popular, I'm going to share with the audience a number of resources that have grown up around the Sefer. There is a website out of Israel called Bilvavi.net, BILVAVI.net, and on this website the Sefer is available in Hebrew, English, Russian, and Yiddish, I believe, translations, and there are a number of shiurim classes, both audio classes and classes on video by the author as well. There are a number of other websites coming out of North America that have grown up around the popularity of this book and its author. There's an important shul synagogue in New York whose Rav Moshe Weinberger has given a long series of classes on this Sefer, and their website is aishkodesh.org, aishkodesh.org, and another blog that has also been instrumental in popularizing this book and also publicizing the visits of the Rav to North America is a blog called Dixie Yid at blogspot.com. Dixie is in way down south in Dixie. There's also a Yahoo discussion group that's built up around people that are studying and practicing the Sefer. So as you can see, it's really in just a number of short years taken the Jewish world by storm, and I mean the Jewish world. It's been popular really among all segments of Jewry today, among Sephardic Jews, Hasidic Jews, the yeshiva world, among people new to Judaism, and people that have been seriously practicing Judaism for many years. The Sefer, which I'll try to show on camera, is basically a handbook, a manual, which is a step-by-step program for spiritual growth. And this is the first of two volumes that deal with this program. And then, as I mentioned before, the author has put together many, many other books that really go into much deeper issues. There are two things I want to say before we get into the contents of this Sefer. First of all, it is a book which is not simply teachings, but it's a program of practice. And the author assumes that each step in the program could very well take months, if not years. And the assumption really is that a person will not progress from one step until the next step until they've really assimilated and took some ownership over the initial step. And clearly we're not going to be able to do that in our 3-week class. So hopefully the purpose of this series will be to whet your appetites and to introduce you to the program, but really to practice it properly requires a serious amount of work and practice for each of the steps before we really progress to the next step. We're not going to probably have time to finish the entire 5-part program. Hopefully, God willing, we'll be able to get at least halfway through, maybe even a little bit more. One final introductory thought is that we're going to see that the program of the Bilvavi Sefer is based upon very simple ideas. This is not a book of fancy metaphysics. We don't have to have any special equipment. We don't need to be talented in terms of intellectual grasp of Jewish ideas, esoteric Jewish ideas. The program is really based upon very, very simple ideas, and they're going to sound quite simple. There's a story that's told about a Lubavitcher Chassid who once ran into a Kutzker Chassid, and the Kutzker asked him, "What do you think about when you say Kriyat Shema, when you say the Shema?" And the Chabadsker said that he really meditates as he's saying the Shema on some of the upper celestial realms and different sefirot, and he really went into a very deep metaphysical explanation of some of the most esoteric ideas in Judaism. And the Kutzker turned to him and said, "In vu is de pupik? Where is the belly button? Meaning, where does the rubber hit the road?" It's very easy to get lost in high, falutin, esoteric, complex, metaphysical, transcendental ideas, and to think about the angelic realms. But this is a sefer that really is dealing with spirituality on the ground, and really at the most simple, basic level. And that's part of the power of this sefer. So let's begin. As I mentioned, this sefer is a manual, a program, which provides a step-by-step guide to spiritual growth. And the sefer begins in a very similar way that the famous sefer by the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, begins his famous Mesilat Yesharim, the Pathways of the Just, by saying that the first step in any kind of spiritual program, and this program particularly, is the importance, the critical importance, of clarifying our goals in life, to know what's important, to know where we're heading, to understand, really on a very deep level, to really think through carefully and clarify, why are we here in this world? What are we here to accomplish? What are the ultimate goals of our lives? And the Bilvavi spends actually many, many chapters, and his style seems quite repetitious because he wants to really make sure that the reader is on the same page, that the reader understands that this first step has to be assimilated, understood, and the reader has to really resonate with the ultimate goal of the sefer, otherwise the program is not going to work. Now, there's a truth that we're told that if we don't know where we're going, there are many ways of getting there. And what we really need to do at the very onset of this program is to ponder and to really clarify why we're here. What is Judaism supposed to do for us? This is a sefer that really tries to plumb the depths of Judaism. Judaism is supposed to be taking us somewhere. Judaism is supposed to be doing something to us and getting us somewhere. And so the question here is, where are we supposed to be going? They tell a story of someone who opened up a store selling shoes. And as soon as the store opened, it began doing quite well. And there were customers that were flocking to it. There were always crowds in this store. And people started talking about it and sending their friends. And it was really the most successful store in the area. They were doing a hand-over-hand business, and you can imagine that it was the talk of the town. And the big shock was that months later, not that many months after opening, there's a big sign on the outside of the store that says that they've gone out of business. And it was quite a shock, because it didn't make sense that here was a store that was always crowded, there were always many, many customers, all day and all night. There wasn't any slow time. And this took place from the very first day until the very last day. It wasn't clear why a store like this would have gone out of business. And the accountant that was reviewing the books saw that they did an incredibly huge business. They had sales into the millions of dollars. And initially it looked strange. And then, after just a little bit of investigation, it became clear what was wrong here, that the owner of this store was purchasing shoes for $25 a pair, but they were selling the shoes at this store for $20 and $15 a pair of shoes. So he confronted the owner and said, "What were you thinking? What were you doing? You know, that's not the way a person normally does business. Normally you buy it for 25 and you mark it up. You sell it for more than that." And the owner of the store said, "Well, I wanted to have lots of customers." So the answer is very obvious, that the goal of opening up a store is not to have many customers. Right? The goal is not to sell a lot of shoes. That's not the goal. Right? The goal is to make a profit. The goal is to make money. Selling the shoes is just a means to the end. So when we think about our practice of Judaism, our practice of Torah, it's not simply to practice Torah. Torah is a means to an end. It's supposed to get us somewhere. It's supposed to do something to us. And so the Sefer Bilvavi stresses over and over at the beginning that we need to really think carefully and deeply about why are we in this world? What is the purpose of our life? And he doesn't leave it as an open-ended question. He quotes from the very beginning of the Sefer Mesilat Yesharim, Pathways of the Just, by Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. And I'll share with you the very, very beginning of this book. It's in chapter 1, where the Ramchal calls this chapter Bivayor Klal Chovat Adam Ba'olamo. Right, this is concerning a person's duty in the world. What is our responsibility in this world? What is our responsibility in life? And the Ramchal begins by saying that the foundation of saintliness and the root of perfection in the service of God lies in a person's coming to see clearly and to recognize as a truth the nature of his duty in the world and the end toward which he should direct his vision and his aspiration in all of his labors, all the days of his life. Essentially, what the Ramchal is saying is that the first step in any kind of spiritual program is to clarify what are our goals, what are we living for. And he provides the answer of the Torah, the answer of Judaism. Our sages of blessed memory have taught us that man was created for the sole purpose of rejoicing in God, rejoicing in Hashem, and deriving pleasure from the splendor of his presence. For this is the true joy and the greatest pleasure that can be found. The Ramchal goes on a few paragraphs later to say, when you look further into the matter, you will see that only union with God, connecting with God, constitutes true perfection. As King David said in Psalm 73, verse 28, "But as for me, the nearness of God is my good, kirvat Elohim li tov." And in Tehillim 27:4, which we recited during the time of the holidays, David says, "I asked one thing from God." What is the one thing I ask from God? "That I will seek, to dwell in the house of Hashem all the days of my life." That's it. That's the purpose of life. "For this alone is the true good. And anything besides this, which people think is good, is actually nothing but emptiness and deceptive worthlessness." It's a pretty strong statement. And I think it's important to spend a few moments together thinking about why is this the greatest pleasure? Why is the attachment to Hashem, connecting to God, getting close to God, why is that the ultimate thing that we can pursue? Why is it the most pleasurable experience human beings can have? First thing we need to think about is that there isn't anything greater in existence than Hashem. God is the greatest reality. There is nothing greater than Hashem. And therefore, Hashem is the source of every other pleasure in the world. Every pleasure in the world points to God. So if we appreciate a sunset, if we appreciate chocolate, if we love to see a beach and the waves rolling in, and we're awestruck by the Grand Canyon and the birth of a child, these are all things that were painted by the artist of this world. We call God Sur Olamim, sometimes translated the Rock of Ages, but also the artist of the world. God is the artist of the world. And if we find the artwork pleasurable, if we take joy in the production of Hashem, in the world that he produced, in the pleasures of this world, well, obviously, to connect with the source of those pleasures is going to be ultimately pleasurable. When I was a teenager, I had the experience of working at a Nabisco factory, and I remember the joy of being able to eat Fig Newtons off the assembly line. Right? If we enjoy something, imagine enjoying it in its more pristine form. And if we enjoy, let's say, reading a particular author, and we love their literature, imagine spending time with that author and getting to know them, getting to really penetrate their mind. So we live in a world where there are many pleasures, but each of these pleasures points beyond itself to the author, to the source of those pleasures. And so the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate good, is really to connect ourselves with the source of everything. Another thing to realize is that only this pleasure, only this experience is eternal. Everything else that we experience is just a passing temporal kind of pleasure. We're not going to be able to enjoy the pleasures of this world, Olam Hazeh, for very long. It's really a very, very small part of our lives. We ultimately all will live eternally in a spiritual world, in Olam Haba. And so the pleasures that are spiritual are much greater than the pleasures that we think are the ultimate pleasures, because these pleasures of this world are very, very temporal. They're limited. We don't get to experience them forever. And when we think about the continuum of pleasures in this world itself, we realize that really the more spiritual pleasure is in this world, the more pleasurable it really is. The kind of pleasures in this world that we often mistake as pleasures but are really distractions are not really the kind of things we like to spend a lot of time doing. It might be pleasurable to take a nap once in a while, maybe to sleep late one morning once in a while, but no one's going to want to spend weeks and weeks and weeks sleeping. It might be nice to eat a nice meal once in a while, but no one's going to want to continually eat for hours and hours and hours. The more physical pleasures are in this world, the tendency is we don't really relish the idea of experiencing them really for long periods of time. But when it comes to more spiritual pleasures, we could really imagine ourselves experiencing them for an eternity. If we really love someone, we can really see ourselves spending every moment of our lives with that person. If we really love music, and music is something which is extremely spiritual, a person can imagine listening to music 20 hours a day. So we realize that the attachment to Hashem is the ultimate pleasure because it's the pleasure which is the most spiritual and one that is eternal. been pointed out that if the whole purpose of this life that we're living was for physical pleasures, we could have been created without all of the incredibly profound components of our nature. We could have been built with much less sophisticated equipment if the whole purpose of our lives was physical pleasure. We wouldn't need an eternal, transcendent, spiritual soul if the entire purpose of this life was physical pleasures. Ultimately, the soul is our essence. We're not our bodies. Our bodies is something which, again, we only will experience for 120 years. The essence of who we are is our soul, our neshama. The soul is really who we are. Therefore, that's where the ultimate pleasure is going to be experienced, in the essence of who we are. And when you think about it, everything in the world only is fulfilled when it's used for what it was created for. If you buy a piece of exercise machinery and you ask the treadmill in your house, what would make it happy? It would really be happy if it was used for what it was made for. I don't think the treadmill is going to be happy if it turns into a very expensive place to store your clothing. So things ultimately are fulfilled when they're used for the purpose which they were created. A human being was created ultimately as a fusion between a body and a soul, the soul being the ultimate part of who we are, and therefore, that's the locus of where our pleasures have to be experienced, in the realm of our soul. And the soul is never going to be satisfied with physical pleasures. So the first stage that the Bilvavi addresses, and it's the most critical stage, is to really resonate and to think about this idea, to really think about whether or not this idea is something that we are able to find ourselves in agreement with. Do we really believe that the ultimate pleasure possible is to connect with God? That the ultimate purpose of our being, really, of being alive, is to attach ourselves to the Almighty? And this is a teaching of Judaism. He doesn't really propose this as something which is up for grabs. And it's an assumption that we make as Jews. It's almost an axiom of Judaism. And he goes on to say that the purpose of life is both known and it's not known. It's known because we read it in the Sefarim. We read it in our holy literature. We also understand it on some intellectual level. So a person who's gone to a Jewish school and was asked, what is the purpose of living? The correct answer would be that we're here and we're in this world in order to experience the ultimate bliss of attaching ourselves to God. But the author of the Sefer Bilvavi goes on to say that this idea is both known and it's not known. It's not known because even though we know it intellectually, we don't necessarily live with this idea. It might be a concept, it might be knowledge that we have, but we may not identify with this knowledge and actually feel this knowledge. We may not be real with this knowledge. And this is the second point that Bilvavi wants us to understand, that an intellectual idea that we have is not really going to get us too far. He says that the knowledge of our purpose in life, I'm quoting now from his paragraph 6, the knowledge of our purpose in life is not just a fact that we learn and file away. It must be experienced, lived, and breathed, so that you're totally attuned to it. Rabbi Soloveitchik has an interesting and fascinating teaching about brachot, blessings that we make on certain occasions. And he asked the following question. We know that if we're going to have an apple or an orange in the morning, so we say a blessing of Borei Pri Ha'etz, we bless God who created the fruit of the trees, before we eat the apple or the orange. If a person eats the orange at 8 o'clock in the morning and then goes to work and comes back at night and wants to have another piece of fruit, another apple, many, many hours later, the person has to make another blessing. They have to make a blessing again. However, in the morning, we have a custom to say the Birchat HaTorah. We say a blessing every morning for the study of Torah. And actually, you make three blessings. And then the custom that we have printed in our Sidurim, our prayer books, is to actually study short passages of Torah in the morning as soon as we make these blessings for the study of Torah. And then we might leave our home or leave the synagogue and go to work and spend the whole day away and maybe not involved with Torah study whatsoever. And we come home, have dinner at night, and then we go out to study in the evening. So the Jewish law, the halacha, is that we don't have to make another Birchat HaTorah when we come back to studying Torah at night. Why is that? So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that there are two kinds of awareness possible in this world. He has what we call acute awareness and what he refers to as latent awareness. For example, when a mother is playing with her child or nursing her child, the mother has an acute awareness of the being in the presence of the child. The mother is acutely aware of this child's existence. But if the mother is called away, or the mother has to go for an appointment somewhere and leaves this baby with a babysitter, the mother is still aware that she's the mother of this child and she has a child in the care of the babysitter. The mother has a latent awareness of this child. So when we have our fruit in the morning, the experience of eating that fruit, we have an acute awareness. We are very aware that we're eating that fruit. But when we finish and we go to another activity during the day, we are not connected to that fruit whatsoever. We have no connection to that fruit. And so when we come back many hours later and desire another apple, we must make another blessing. But Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, when it comes to learning Torah, that's something that we're always connected to. When we're actually studying Torah, we're acutely connected to the Torah in the same way that the mother would be acutely aware of her child's presence when she's with the child. However, even when we're not studying Torah, when we leave our books and we go to work, Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that the Jew is still latently connected to the Torah. It always is connected to us in some way. It's always part of who we are. And so in the Sefer Bilvavi, he explains that we have to have this kind of connection to our spiritual ideas. It's not enough for us to just know intellectually that the goal of our lives is to come close to Hashem and to connect with God. The goal of this Sefer is really similar to the goal of many Musar Sorim and Sorim in Hasidus, which is to get us to begin to feel those things that we know. As we say in the Torah, V'yadata hayom v'hashevota el ravecha. We have to know something, but then we have to bring it to our hearts. We have to get real with that knowledge. We have to identify with that knowledge. We have to become one with that knowledge. So the starting point of the Sefer Bilvavi is to truly clarify the Kirvat Elohim Li Tov, that the closeness of God is for me something which is delicious and wonderful. It's life's greatest pleasure. We have to clarify that that's really the case. We really believe that, and we understand why that's the case. We have to understand that that's the primary goal of our lives, and that everything else we do is in some way to be a service to that idea. And then the Bilvavi says, and he repeats this, that we have to not just understand this idea, but we have to really want it. We have to really desire it. There's a wonderful Rashi in the beginning of Sefer Shmos, in the beginning of the book of Exodus, where it says in Parshas Va'era, God says that I appeared to Abraham, to Yitzchak, and to Yaakov. It's a very simple verse. When we hear this verse in the Torah, we don't scratch our heads perplexed and wonder what the Torah is saying. It's pretty straightforward. God says, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. We wouldn't expect that any of our Torah commentaries have to explain to us the meaning of this verse. And yet Rashi contributes two words. Rashi has two words as a commentary to this verse. And we wonder, why would Rashi have to say anything? Rashi is the greatest of our Torah commentaries, written about 1,000 years ago. And Rashi's two words are so perplexing that a number of commentaries to Rashi suggested that it may be even a misprint, a typographical error. Rashi says, on the verse, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, Rashi says, El Ha'avot, to the patriarchs. And we wonder, why does Rashi have to tell us at this point in the book of Exodus that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are the patriarchs? We already know this from the book of Genesis, from Bereishit, from the first book in the five books of Moses. We already know it from earlier on in the book of Exodus, in the book of Shemot. We've been told already that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are the Avot. So what is Rashi telling us here? That God appeared to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov to the Avot. So a number of commentaries to Rashi, I've seen this in the Chassam Sofer and in some of the Hasidic masters, they explain very beautifully that Rashi is not telling us here who God appeared to. That's not really a question here. That's fairly clear. What Rashi is clarifying for us is, why did God appear to them? Why did Hashem appear to Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov? And Rashi says, do you know why? Because they were avot. In Hebrew, the root ava can have the meaning to desire, to want. And that's why Hashem appeared to them, because they wanted Hashem. They desired to have Hashem in their lives. And so the Sefer Bavli says to us at this point that it's important, it's critical, that we know that we really want this. The rest of the book, which is a guide to developing this intimacy with Hashem, with actually feeling the presence of Hashem in our lives every moment of the day, we're not going to get that unless we really and truly want it. Now, what I'm going to try to share during the remainder of this shiur is the program that the Sefer Bavli puts forward and how it actually works. What is the mechanism for how it works? As I mentioned before, this is a program that takes a number of steps. And tonight we're going to essentially share the first of those steps, which is for us to clarify what our ultimate goal is in life, why we're here, why we're alive, why we're living, what are we trying to accomplish. And as I mentioned, it's not simply to have this as a piece of information that we're able to regurgitate as the answer to a question, but the goal is to actually identify emotionally on the deepest level with this idea. So the question is, how do we do that? How do we take this idea, which maybe many of us would agree to? We may give our assent to this idea. And how do we begin to bring it to our hearts? How do we begin to really make it part of who we are? And we think about it, a businessman doesn't just know that they're a businessman. When he's at work and he's in the office, this knowledge of who he is animates his life. That idea that I'm here working today in order to make a good living, that's not just a piece of information that's separate from who he is and what he does from moment to moment. That idea animates everything that he does during the day. And so that question now is going to occupy us. How do we take this piece of information that the most important thing in life is to attach ourselves to Hashem and get close to God? How do we begin to bring it to our hearts and identify with it emotionally? And the Sefer Bavli has as an important part of his program an idea that's found in the beginning, again, of the Sefer Mesilat Yesharim, The Pathways of the Just by Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. The Ramchal begins his Sefer Mesilat Yesharim by saying that he didn't write his book in order to teach anyone new ideas that they don't already know. He says actually very modestly that you really won't find many new ideas in his book. The truth of the matter is that there are amazing chidushim, wonderful ideas that you can discover in the Sefer Misot Yesharim. But he says that really this, it wasn't written to teach us any new information. He suggests that everything in the Sefer are things that we already know, and that you can read the book and you won't walk away feeling that you've learned anything new. He says that he only wrote the book in order to remind us and again get us to identify internally with ideas that we already know. And he says, therefore, the benefit of his book will not come just by reading it once, but he says it will only come by repetition and by attention, meaning that we have to really be attentive to what is written in the book and to go over it again and again and again. And it's by that repetition and attention to the ideas that we begin to assimilate them. We have to understand that we have an opponent in this goal, that, in the words of Alan Marinus, who's written a number of wonderful introductions to Mutzar study, every one of us has an internal adversary, It's our Yetzer Hara, our evil inclination, which really is here for our benefit, we know. We have to remember that the Yetzer Hara's ultimate goal is to obscure this idea from us. The Mesilat Yesharim and the Sefer Bavavi say that this is really the purpose of our lives. It's the goal of our lives. And the Yetzer Hara's primary interest is in keeping this goal from us. It's obscuring this goal from us. And what's amazing is that the Yetzer Hara, our evil inclination, will let us have everything except for the main thing. The Yetzer Hara will be very happy to allow us to be frum, to be religious, to do mitzvot, to learn Torah. You can do all those things. But just don't think too much about why you're living. Don't think too much about why you're here in this world. They say that the Berditchefer, Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditchef, would sometimes come into the Beis Medrash, to the house of study in Berditchef. Imagine there must have been dozens and dozens and dozens of people studying Torah, learning Gemara, and it looks like they're doing what the Jews should be doing. But he would come in and he'd bang on his shtender, Rabbi side, there's a Gottun Himmel. It's so easy sometimes to forget, in the midst of all the Jewish things that we do, what the purpose of everything is. We can easily lose the forest from the trees. He actually explains in the Sefer Bilvavi that this expression in English, to lose the forest from the trees, really is a Jewish expression. It says in the Zohar Kadosh, in the Holy Zohar, that the mitzvot, the commandments that Hashem gave us, the Zohar refers to them as itin, which is the Aramaic word for etzot, for advice. And the Zohar says that all of the commandments we do, all the mitzvot we do, are really just 613 different pieces of advice on how to get close to Hashem, on how to build a connection to Hashem. We know that the word mitzvah itself is related to the word tsevet or tsafta, which means a connector, a binder. And that this is really the goal and the purpose of all the mitzvot. So what happens is, when we do with a mitzvot and we don't think about the ultimate goal, the word eitzah, this word that the Zohar uses, advice, so Eitzah is related to the Hebrew word Eitz, which is a tree. So we have a forest, the 613 trees, 613 different ways that the Torah advises us on how to get close to Hashem. And it's so easy, unfortunately, for us to lose the forest for the trees, that we get so wrapped up in the trees sometimes of doing all the things that we are supposed to be doing as Jews and not thinking about what the purpose of these mitzvot are, where they're supposed to take us, what it's supposed to accomplish. The Sefer Bilvavi gives an amazing teaching. It says in the Gemara, several places in the Gemara, that even the most empty Jews, the Reikonim Shabahim, even the most empty Jews, the Talmud says, is as full of mitzvot, as full of commandments, as a rimon, as a pomegranate. There's a tradition that a pomegranate has 613 seeds. I'm not sure if anyone's actually done a scientific study to confirm that, but we know that this pomegranate has many, many different seeds. And what's strange about this Gemara is that if it's telling us that even the most empty Jew is as full of mitzvot, full of commandments, as a pomegranate, which has 613 seeds, so why do we call that person a rake or an empty person? It doesn't make any sense. A person is so full of mitzvot, and we call them empty. So the Sefer Bavavi says that the thing about the pomegranate is that the seeds are all separate. They're attached to one another. When you bite into a pomegranate, you really have to somehow get each seed by itself sometimes. You know, you don't bite into pomegranate. The pomegranate, the essence, the seeds are scattered all over the place. It's different than biting into a pear or an apple or an orange, where that's what you're biting into. You're biting into, that's the substance. That's the unity of the whole thing. So what the pomegranate really lacks is a kind of overarching unity. The seeds are all disparate, they're separate. And that's what he's saying here, that it's possible for a person to observe many commandments, but unless these mitzvot are somehow tied together, unified with their purpose, which means that these are all here as part of a program where we build our souls in order to connect ourselves to Hashem, a person can be very, very empty spiritually. They have a very interesting expression that a wise person once said. They said that the difference between religion and spirituality is like the difference between reading a menu and eating a meal. The difference between religion and spirituality is like the difference between reading the menu and eating the meal. That when we read the menu, we don't get nourishment. We don't get full. And so it's possible for people to be very religious Jews, but not very spiritual Jews. If we're just going through these rituals and commandments and mitzvot without really connecting to their purpose and their goal. So the Yetzer Hara, the Sefer Bilvavi tells us, is willing to let us be religious, willing to let us be very frum and learn a lot of Torah and do a lot of mitzvot, but it's invested in keeping us away from the bottom line. The question for us now is, how do we take these ideas and make them part of who we are? I mentioned previously that the technique of the Sefer Bilvavi is based upon this idea from the Metzilat Yesharim, which is through repetition. You know, the Bali Musar say that the greatest enemy that we have in life is hergel, is routine. It's when we do something over and over and over and over again, it becomes really a routine that we do automatically without thinking. Yet the Bali Musar say that, at the other hand, hergel can be employed by us. There's a famous story from the Talmud that Rabbi Akiva, we're known that Rabbi Akiva, who was the greatest of our rabbis, really was an ignoramus. For the first 40 years of his life, he didn't know any Torah, didn't know anything whatsoever. He actually said that he despised Talmidei Chachamim, he hated Torah scholars. What turned Rabbi Akiva around? So he says that he was once by a flowing stream, and he saw there was a rock that had a hole that was born through it. And he saw that the hole was born through by the dripping of water, constant dripping of water. And he thought about this, and he realized that if a rock, which is the hardest thing in the world, can be penetrated by water, which is the softest thing in the world, and he said, then my heart, which is soft, can certainly be penetrated by the fire of Torah. So what worked for this rock was the constant pounding, a constant beating of this water on the rock. And so the Sefer Lulavi teaches us a program of, throughout the day, mini meditations, spending time regularly throughout the day, just repeating and focusing on the ideas that we know in our mind as a way of helping bring them closer to our hearts. So throughout the day, what we're advised to do in this first step is to spend a few moments each hour just reviewing mentally in our head, why am I here? Why am I alive? And to think about this idea of the beauty, the delicious nature of getting close to Hashem. We can feel how delicious it is in this world, that we have in this world such delight, such incredible pleasure from spiritual experiences. The Talmud says, Ein simcha elaka hataras asfekos. There's no joy in the world greater than figuring something out, right? When we get to use our mind is a beautiful part of our neshama. So we know that all of these experiences in this world that we have that are spiritual experiences, a Shabbos experience, getting a chance to just be in love, getting a chance to look at a sunset, to experience the beauty of this world, it's delicious. And so we know already, we know in our heads that spiritual pleasure is wonderful and that the ultimate spiritual pleasure would be getting close to Hashem. And so the Sefer Lulavi says, think about this. Don't just file it away in the back of your mind, but once an hour, at least, take this idea out and look at it. Think about it. That's one part of the Lulavi program. Another part of the program that we're going to see is employed throughout the steps of the program is to pray, is to use the power of prayer. Prayer is such an incredibly powerful tool that we have. So the Sefer Lulavi says, you know what? It would be great, wonderful, if once a day, more than once a day, in our own words, we just pray to Hashem, just very simply, Master of the Universe, Hashem, you know that I want to be close to you. And you know that my desire is to be close to you. But sometimes my desire is weak. It's not as strong as it really should be. It's an idea I have in my head, but my emotional desire for it, my identification with that idea, is weak. And I really want it. I really very deeply want to have this live inside of me. I want to become one with this idea, because it's the whole purpose of my life. So please, Hashem, help me implant this idea in my heart. Help me plant in my heart the true desire to come close to you. In your own words. And the Sefer Lulavi says that praying to Hashem for each of the five steps is a critical tool that we can use to acquire those steps. So there's two parts to the program at this point. One is to spend some time just meditating, thinking, regularly during the day. And it may feel that we're not accomplishing anything. But again, the first 200 drops of water on that stone may not have done too much. But through constant repetition, over and over and over again, and meditating and thinking and clarifying and then praying for this, we are given an assurance that we will be able to acquire it. The book is called Bilvavi Mishkan Evne. In my heart, I will build a sanctuary. One of the Tehillim that we say in our prayer service, one of the psalms that we recite in our prayer service, is Psalm 30. I'm going to read this psalm. It says, a psalm, a song for the dedication of the temple by David. I will exalt you, Hashem, for you have drawn me up and have not let my foes rejoice over me. Hashem, my God, I cried out to you, and you healed me. Hashem, you have raised up my soul from the lower world. You have preserved me from my descent to the pit. Sing to Hashem, his devout ones, and give thanks to his holy name. For his anger endures only a moment. Life results from his favor. In the evening one lies down weeping, but with the dawn, a cry of joy. I had said in my serenity I would never falter. But all is through your favor, Hashem. You supported my greatness with might. If you were but to conceal your face, I would be confounded. To you, Hashem, I would call, and to Hashem I would appeal. What gain is there in my death, in my descent to the pit? Will the dust acknowledge you? Will it declare your truth? Hear, Hashem, and favor me. Hashem, be my helper. You have transformed my lament into dancing for me. You undid my sackcloth and girded me with gladness, so that my soul might sing to you and not be still, Hashem, my God. I will thank you forever. It's a psalm that we say regularly in our tefillot. In the commentary of Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, Hirsch's commentary to the psalms, he asks a very obvious question. He says, this psalm begins by saying it's a psalm, a song for the dedication of the temple by David. And yet, there doesn't seem to be any connection whatsoever between that title and the rest of the psalm. There's nothing in this psalm at all about the temple, about building a temple. So Hirsch explains that we need to understand what the temple was. The temple ultimately was a symbol of the closeness of Hashem to us in this world. It's a symbol of the intimate relationship between God and the Jewish people. We're commanded to build the temple, the first commandment in the book of Shemot. Hashem says, V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti besocham. Build for me a sanctuary, and I will dwell among them. It doesn't say I will dwell in it. I will dwell among the Jewish people. The temple itself is a physical representation of the closeness of Hashem to each and every one of us. And so Rav Hirsch says that actually in this psalm, what is happening is that David, who really was the driving force behind building the first temple, he dedicated this psalm as the inauguration psalm for the temple because in this psalm, he reflects on his experiences in life and how he always felt his trust in Hashem no matter what was happening to him. And so his personal feelings of closeness to God, his personal feelings that Hashem was always with him, that is the most appropriate psalm for dedication to the temple. The temple is just a physical symbol of this closeness that we feel to Hashem. And so the Sefer Blavavi is going to present to us a series of steps we're going to cover in the coming two sessions that will help us develop this kind of feeling of closeness to Hashem in a very palpable way, that we should be able to go through the day and not only feel this occasionally during the day. We have an ambitious goal here. The goal of the Sefer Blavavi is to actually feel this constantly throughout the day. I'm going to conclude tonight's program with a story, and hopefully we'll have a few moments if there are any questions or comments. I really didn't hear or see anyone yet raising anything tonight. Story is of a contest that was held in England, the poetry reading contest. I guess in societies where they didn't have all of the fancy luxury distractions that we have, that's what people would do for entertainment. They would get together and read poetry. And they had a series of people who presented their readings. And towards the end of the evening, a young man did something unusual. Instead of reading one of his own creations, one of his own poems, or one of the classical English poems, he read a poem from the Bible. This young man read Psalm 23, which is one of our most famous psalms. The Lord is my shepherd, I will not lack anything. And he read this psalm in a very, very powerful, dramatic way, and all the judges were very impressed, and it looked like he was going to walk away with the prize. And just before they were about to conclude the program, an elderly gentleman got up in the back, and he, speaking with a broken Yiddish accent, he really didn't even speak English that well, he asked the judges if he could participate, if it's not too late for him to try and read something. So they were a little bit stunned because the evening was about to end, and they didn't know if it was appropriate at this point to take any last-minute entries. And then, you know, they thought about it, and they said, you know, maybe we'll get a kick out of it. This old fellow, you know, is going to probably appear very foolish, and maybe we'll get a good laugh at his expense. And so they said, go ahead, you can try. So in his very, very broken English, he also read the same psalm, Psalm 23. Hashem roi lo echsar, Hashem is my shepherd, I won't be lacking anything. And he read this psalm with a tremendous amount of passion, and there wasn't a dry eye in the whole room. Not only the judges, but the people in the audience, they were brought to tears by the incredible power of this old person's presentation, the way he read this psalm. And the young man who had read it previously, his heart fell. He felt so disappointed that here he sees that everyone's being brought to tears by this old man, and he's not going to be able to win the first prize. And as it turned out, the jury awarded the first prize to the old man. So after the evening was over, the young fellow went over to the old man, and he said, I feel horrible. I mean, I thought I did such a good job, and you took the first prize. How did you do it? And the old man said to him, you know, Sonny, you really read it very well. Your diction was beautiful. Your pronunciation was tremendous. You know, your reading was impeccable. You really read it wonderfully. But he said, there's only one difference between you and me. And the difference is that I know the shepherd. I know the shepherd. And so that's going to be the wonderful goal of the Sefer Bilvavi, is for us to be able to develop this kind of intimate closeness to the shepherd, to Hashem. And it's not an impossible program. Again, as I mentioned, the steps are very simple, but they require two things. They require sincerity, simply that we want it. Like Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they wanted Hashem in their lives. So it requires sincerity, and it requires diligence. We have to really commit ourselves to the practice. It's not something we can do haphazardly. We can't do it one day and not the next day. And again, the program only really works if we build this as a regular part of our day. It can't be something we just spend a few moments on once a day. The Bilvavi says that we really need to spend a little bit of time every hour, doing a little bit of meditation and thinking on the step of that program. So the first step that I'm hoping we'll all think about over the next week is to again clarify for ourselves, what are the ultimate goals of our lives spiritually? Why are we here? What are we hoping to accomplish in our lives? And then to really spend, it might take us a few months or even a year or two, to constantly remind ourselves of this idea, to meditate on it, to pray for it. And we know that with this effort, we'll be blessed and we'll acquire this, we'll identify with this, and then we're ready for the next step. So if there are questions or comments before we have to break for the evening, is anyone... Let's see, we have... Yisrael from Passaic, I'll just read his comment. This reminds me of Reb Soloveitchik's statement that the most important lesson received in his life was from his mother, who taught him about Hashem's presence in his life through a firm hand that supports his frail shoulders. That's a very wonderful thought. You know, the Rav, I'll just share with you a story I heard once. He would study with his students from Yeshiva University every summer in Boston. They come up to Boston, and he would study Talmud with them, Gemara. And one summer, he suggested that in preparation for the Yom Noroyim, for the high holidays, that they should study the Likutei Torah from the Lubavitch Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, a very, very important work in Chabad Hasidus. And they looked at him, they were shocked that we're going to study this book of Hasidic philosophy. They said, we came here to study Talmud. And they wanted to learn Gemara. And Rabbi Soloveitchik said to them that, you know, all you want really is to be able to get into my head. You're not interested in what's in my heart. So I think that Yisrael from Seik is quite right that, you know, the learning that we do and the mitzvot that we practice are a foundation. They're really, really there to really get us to this place where we are able to develop this closeness to Hashem. So Rabbi Soloveitchik is saying that ultimately that's right. That was the most important thing that he learned, right, was that we're able to experience this warmth of Hashem's presence in our life, right? Everything else is really hopefully leading up to that and getting us to that spot. So I want to thank you all for being here tonight, and God willing, we'll meet again together next week. Everyone should have a successful week, and God bless you all.